Good morning and welcome to the April 17th meeting of the House Committee on Economic Development. Today we are going to be hearing about Senate Bill 1044. So I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1044. We're not planning to work the bill today, but we are planning to get public input on the base bill, and there are a number of amendments that are under consideration, predominantly amendments 6 through 9. And I will ask Mr. Crawford to give us a brief orientation and then invite forward Mr. Steve Marsh, Renee Niedermeyer, and Jesse Sweet from OLCC to provide some additional detail. And then we've got a sign-up list, but would welcome additional sign-ups from anyone who'd like to present input.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1044 comes to this committee without opposition from the Senate. The base bill primarily deals with licensing authority with the OLCC. The committee is being asked to consider the A6s, 7s, 8s, and 9s. The A6 is exempt from public employee retirement limitations on hours worked by retired members. Those retired members whose primary work duties relate to license investigation, complaint response, or liquor law violation investigation. It repeals this exemption on July 1st, 2019. The A7s specify a license granted under the Liquor Control Act is subject to cancellation, suspension, or restriction, allows the OLCC to issue a restricted license or require mandatory training for any license issued. It allows a person to use an identification card issued by a federally recognized Indian tribe or federal territory to purchase alcohol, and modifies the statement used by a person without specified identification to attest they are over 21 years of age. The A8s allow the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to issue an on-premise sales license to a winery licensee, a person having an interest or controlling exercising control over a license, or to a brewery that brews more than 200,000 barrels of malt beverages annually. The A9s allow a distillery license holder to sell distilled liquor of 10% alcohol by volume content.
Thank you. And again, OLCC folks, we'd love to have you come forward and provide some additional context if you would. And I will note that we have only one person signed up to offer public testimony, but I know that there are a number of folks in the room who may have views about one or more of the amendments. Since we're trying to develop broad support for whatever it is that we work ideally next week, it would be great if anyone has concerns that it would be helpful to put on the record, have that, you know, those folks come forward so that we can work through things in a consensus-seeking way over the next few days. But do what seems most appropriate. Welcome.
Thank you. For the record, Steve Marks, Executive Director, OLCC, with Ms. Renee Niedermeyer, our Intergovernmental Director and Communications Director, and Jesse Sweet, who is our Policy Advisor. We come before you today with what I call the OLCC Improvement and Efficiency Act. Senator Beyer actually provided us one of his personal priorities to deal with the public funds issue. And since we rarely have bills that relate solely to OLCC, we took the opportunity to do several cleanups in our statute and our structures, and Renee and Jesse will go through those in detail with you. And then I'll spend some time carrying the Dash 6 amendment and speak to that later. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jesse and Renee.
Excellent. Welcome.
For the record, Renee Niedermeyer, Director of Government Affairs for the OLCC. I'm going to talk about the several things in the base bill, hand it over to Jesse, and then we'll talk specifically to the amendments. One exception from the public funds bill allows us to do retail expansion easier. Specifically, what we're trying to solve here is public funds need to be deposited within 24 hours. And we want our retailers to be able to use modern banking practices, which is ACH transfers. And the way an ACH transfer works is you initiate the transfer within, you know, you could do it in that same day of the sales or within 24 hours. You only have like half an hour to take it back. So once it's on its way, it's on its way, but it actually doesn't get deposited in an account until the next day, so it's within 48 hours. So we've worked with Treasury, and this gives us an ability to be more flexible with our retail agents as we expand across the state. It also allows them not to have dual cash registers, one for their liquor sales and one for everything else. So that's a cleanup, and we've got the Treasury support on that as well. The second thing, the other thing that this bill does is it removes barriers to our online, a new online service permit application process that we would like to have. In statute, there's actually a provision that says you have to have a physical signature. And so that makes it, that just adds another step that doesn't make any sense. We could do digital signatures online. So the other thing that this will do is it'll allow the service permittee, if they lose the permit, to reprint it online, so they won't have a fee for that as well. So that just adds some efficiency there.
For the record, my name is Jesse Sweet for the OLCC, and I'll be speaking to you about the most boring sections of the bill. Section 2 gives OLCC continuing jurisdiction over licenses when the licensee has essentially walked away from the license. This is important because it allows us to collect fines and otherwise hold people accountable when they have surrendered their license or when the license has expired. We have similar authority was just added to one of our bills in the Joint Marijuana Committee. So this is a parallel provision so that we can treat marijuana and liquor the same way. Section 3 amends public contracting law. And it exempts the contracts that OLCC enters with our distillery retail outlet agents from certain public contracting requirements. The contract as a whole is still subject to legal sufficiency review from DOJ, but this keeps us from having to send each individual contract through separate processes for procurement approvals. That concludes the agency testimony on the base bill. Would you like to take questions now, or do you want us to move straight into amendments?
Does anyone have questions on the base bill? And then if not, we'll move into the amendments, please. Any questions on the base bill? All right, then. Well presented. Okay. Please go ahead.
Again, Renee Niedermeyer from OLCC. The one thing we didn't talk about in the base bill that is in there is a provision that allows home brewers to donate their product to charity auctions. So we're going to talk. I'm going to talk about the sevens and the nines, and Jesse will talk about the eights, and Steve will talk about the sixes.
Great.
So in the dash sevens, in the base bill, there was some sanction language, but this allows some additional flexibility in sanctioning. And very specifically, what we're trying to do here is have something in between fines and cancellation, closures and cancellation. So we're finding incidences where some mandatory education, sort of like a traffic school, would be an appropriate sanction. And so this gives us the ability to be able to do that. The second thing that's in the dash sevens is the tribal ID. It allows us to accept tribal ID when we sell alcohol. We have a similar provision in the bill for marijuana.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please, Representative Post.
I'm glad you got to that, because that was the part that I wanted to ask about. And thank you, Madam Chair. I've been reading and reading and reading. I'm trying to figure out what is the need for the tribal ID. Somebody doesn't have a driver's license, and It replaces it?
Precisely.
Is that a rampant problem?
Chair Leininger, Representative Post, actually it is a problem for us. And what happens is in statute, it says that you need ID, you know, to be 21. You need to show that ID, and it's from a state and
federal
entity. And the tribal ID doesn't fit under the statutory definition. And so we just want to make clear that it does fit.
Okay. I didn't know.
I had just learned about that, too. Senator Farioli raised this in the marijuana committee context. He represents part of the Grand Ronde. Part of the Warm Springs Reservation. So anyway, it was learning for me, too. Huh. So this would make the marijuana and the liquor side rules the same, right? Okay. Representative Reschke, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just on this topic, so that I understand, who then manages the tribal ID, the giving out of tribal ID, in the sense that is it the same restrictions and the same process that the state uses to make sure there aren't forgeries, et cetera? And if you don't know, then you don't know.
Representative Reschke, we don't know. We'll have to get back with you on that. But what I can say is I know in our training for the service permittees and with our licensees, we stress looking for forgeries.
It might be better. I mean, they may have a better system than we have. I just want to make sure it's at the standard that we have, so it's not just a laser printed or inkjet printed card that you can go get at whatever and say I'm 21. But it has it has the same sort of standards as a state ID would to purchase alcohol.
Yeah. Representative Clem, did you have a comment?
I did. Are passports from other countries, when someone's visiting or here holding a green card maybe and they don't have a driver's license, is that a valid form of ID?
Yes. For the record, Chair Leininger, Rep. Clem, passports are permitted as ID. Complete list, which is pretty short. I'll just read into the record.
Sure.
It's a person's passport, a motor vehicle operator's license, an identity card, U.S. military identification, and we're looking to add tribal ID, and finally, any other identification card issued by a state or territory of the United States that bears the picture of the person, the name, and date of birth.
Thank you. Representative Clem.
The reason I asked, I think passport covers them, but we always forget when we're making lists the COFA nations, but they hold passports to their home countries, and they're eligible for Oregon driver's licenses now, thankfully. Now every time I hear a list, I have to think, what about COFA?
Good. Thank you for raising that. All right. Please continue.
I'll move on. Again, Jesse Sweet for the record. I'll move on to the Dash 8s. The Dash 8s propose to repeal a portion of the winery statute. And this is an interesting section of statute. What it does is it prohibits a large brewery license, which is 200,000 barrels or more produced annually, from holding an FCOM, which is the full bar license, and a winery license simultaneously with their brewery license. With changes made to the brewery license last year, a brewery has a right to hold an FCOM license. They have a right to hold a winery license, but this provision, which is being proposed for repeal, prevents that brewery from holding both a winery and an FCOM license. This amendment was requested by industry because there are certain business models which require all three licenses to be held by the same entity. And, OLCC has reviewed this. While we take no position on the bill, we certainly don't see a problem with it.
Okay. Great. Thanks. Any questions on Amendment 8? Great. Okay. Thank you.
And again, Renee Niedermeyer, I'm going to be speaking to Amendment 9. This allows a distillery license to manufacture and sell items with a lower alcohol content than is actually allowed in statute right now. In statute, distilled spirits need to have at least a 17% alcohol content by weight, and we've been working with one of our Oregon distillers who would like to manufacture a mixed drink in a can and sell it out of their distillery, but they're not allowed to by law. However, we can accept it from outside of the state. Mm. So this is a fairness issue as well. This does not change the distribution of how the product would be distributed. It's still either sold in the manufacturer's, the distillery, or distributed through the warehouse.
Any comments on that? I think this is a really interesting provision because right now we're boxing out our local producers from creating a product that we allow outside producers to create and sell in the state. And as the Economic Development Committee, it seems like a ripe opportunity for us to be supportive. And from what I understand so far, there is not any opposition in the larger stakeholder community. So, but we'll welcome feedback, on all these amendments over the next few days as we try to finalize a version of the bill that we will try to work next week. Thank you. All right, -6.
-6. For the record, Steve Marks, Executive Director of the -6. The -6 asks for a significant exception to PRS retiree rules on that limitation on hours they can work for what we intend to be one public safety management position inside of the agency to give us the ability to utilize that expertise in person full-time in our management of our public safety operations. This authority would be sunsetted at the end of the next biennium, so it's only open for 2 years for us. And as I've met with all of you individually on this, and been frank that our public safety operations and leadership over the past decade has been pretty inconsistent. Now that we have a Schedule I drug to regulate under Oregon's legal marijuana system, it's vitally important to us that we take every opportunity to increase the professionalism of our operation and to up our game overall in our management of public safety and our execution of public safety services on the behalf of citizens of Oregon. We had tried for the past a couple of years since the resignation of our past public safety director to recruit a manager to that position, someone who could, perform on, high level scale that we need someone to do currently. We've had difficulty doing that. I think, in the public safety services track, working even in a legal marijuana program isn't necessarily a career path that some people take. So we went out and got what I believe is our 5-star recruit. Unbelievably felt great about it. We have former Superintendent Rich Evans, who we've hired under the existing limitation in the halftime participation, halftime hours, that is overseeing our public safety program. Rich, obviously, as superintendent of state police, brings incredible credibility to our marijuana program. He is prepared and able to engage with U.S. attorney, FBI agents in charge, chiefs of police all over the state, sheriffs all over the state, and obviously with Oregon State Police, we'll have exemplary coordination in the execution. So he comes very uniquely qualified to work with law enforcement in the short time that we've had him. He's been engaged in already benefiting the program and streamlining our DPSST certification for our specialized training around our peace officer status for liquor and regulatory specialists. He's initiated And actually, we've initiated and coordinated the use of state police communications and dispatch to utilize for OLCC regulatory specialists, which will allow them greater communications and greater safety in the field. He's acted as our point person with law enforcement on agency negotiations and criminal matters that we've had and non-criminal matters that we faced. I got to say, in the greatest difficulty I've had as director in the decisions that we make really relate to some of the uncertainties between administrative law and criminal law and where the marijuana is, particularly if a DA is not prosecuting something. And having Rich there has been invaluable guidance and aid in reaching resolution of some of those trickier decisions that had to be made. He's prioritized all our workforce activities in terms of enforcement. And beyond that, he has an inherent understanding of state management policies and state processes, which is, again, in itself, at a high level, unique and valuable. And it's going to help us, as an agency, actually lay out our IT plans. He just did a modernization at State Police. And if you had a chance to see what they've done with their IT and how they manage their system, it's pretty incredible. And he's going to work with our divisions, actually, to help them through that process that we need to identify what we as an agency want out of the system. So he brings even more than his law enforcement credentials. I know this is an exception. I know this power needs to be rarely used, but I don't believe this is a nose under the camel's tent. We have a legislature, and the legislature regulates the agency's ability to do this. You always are going to be able to judge the times that you use this opportunity to provide exemptions, because you need an exemption from statute to get it or not. And I have great confidence in Rich. I wouldn't be asking for him if I didn't think he was the exceptional exception. And matters like this are obviously can be volatile and perceptually volatile with the public. I understand that. And I hope that this committee gives us the opportunity to take the action that I believe is in the best interest of the citizens of Oregon for execution of our public safety program and for, you know, dealing with this important move to legalize marijuana and deal with it. His expertise is going to be very, very useful and beneficial to the citizens of Oregon over this two-year period.
Thank you. We have a comment from Representative Brocksmith.
Thank you. And thank you, Director. So it's not uncommon in the law enforcement world. In fact, I believe there's special provision in the law enforcement world that allows deputies and sheriffs to retire from PERS and then come back. I know that a number of sheriffs do that as they're in their elected positions, and some do so as retired sheriff and come back as deputies. The reason is such, as you explained, is the institutional knowledge that is garnered by that individual and how important that is. And so you're also, in essence, saving the state dollars because you're not obligated to pay in that percentage, 12, 15, whatever it may be, into the PERS obligation. In fact, one of my sheriffs is currently, he retired from PERS as of December 31st and then was sworn in for as sheriff at the beginning of the year. So, again, this is not uncommon practice, and it actually saves taxpayer dollars because of the, in this case, states, in that case, county obligation to the PERS retirement.
Thank you. Representative Post.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so more of a comment, and Steve and Renee, thank you. I almost called you Mark, and so I'm sorry.
Happens. I answer to it.
Steve and Renee, I really do appreciate your visit and helping me. And as you know, my first reaction was, and so, but I've really thought a lot about what you presented and presented here today. And so, and I'm glad that you said the nose under the tent, the camel's nose under the tent and everything, because that's my fear. So I think the collective wisdom of this particular committee is probably one of the greatest, if not the greatest, in the entire legislature. So I trust this committee. I know that this committee will make the right decision. I don't know that other committees are necessarily the same as this committee. So I just want to make sure I'm clear on the record that I'm a little fearful that in 2019, Agency X comes in and says, yeah, but we have this guy, and he's just perfect, and he's the only guy that, the same thing. So I'm not, trust me, I understand how important this is. I've really thought a lot about it, and I'm in agreement, and I'm going to vote yes on it. I'm for it, but I want to make sure that every committee in this building thinks the way we're thinking this through and giving this the careful consideration it needs to be had. So that's that part. And the other amendments are absolutely make perfect sense. So I hope that makes sense. I really appreciate what you guys brought to us.
Excellent. Thanks. You could comment if you want, but it seems like that speaks for itself.
Greatly appreciated and fully understand the concern, and that's why we're responsive to it and wanted to make sure that you understand at least what the controls are out there. And it is the legislature. There's no doubt about it, and it's going to be that judgment, and I also trust that judgment. And I think it's, we've had the conversation. I think it's just enormously important that this kind of decision for this kind of program be made in a dispassionate, bipartisan, supportive method. Because, we don't want, as I've told you all, we don't want to embarrass anyone. We don't want to embarrass, the agency or Rich or the legislature or governor or myself in this. I truly believe this is in the best interest of the citizens of the state of Oregon. This is the best decision that I can bring forward, and your judgment in helping me make it and making it solid is vitally important to, I think, our future performance.
Thank you. We've got Representative Lewis and Rep. Reschke, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to comment. I'm in full agreement with what Steve just said. With my background in law enforcement, I can attest to the fact that it's very difficult to manage an organization without that ability to bring somebody in with the institutional knowledge that Rich has, and I know that law enforcement, he has a lot of credibility in the law enforcement arena. So I think you also save money in training and those types of things, and you probably can bring some things to the organization in the way of training the investigators with the background that he's got. So I also am a yes vote on this.
Excellent. Thank you. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, as Rep. Post said, thanks for coming to my office and seeing what the northern side of the building looks like, the better side of the building. So I heard in your testimony about there was you've had trouble for the last couple years filling this position, and now you found the right guy, but he doesn't quite fit because he's a PERS retiree, so we need to make this, as you said, significant exception. And so I'm a little concerned, the nose under the camel's tent, that's a great visual for me. I'm worried about that. But what I'm also worried about is you'll find your guy and you'll go, great, we don't have to worry about it. I want to make sure that you're working in the next 2 years to fill the position, because it's taking you 2-3 years to get to here. Mm-hmm. And it may be that the job is, the way it's structured, is so difficult to fill that it needs to be 2 positions, or it needs to be 3 positions, or it needs to be rethought, because finding the right person is so difficult to find. So if you could comment, that's not really a question, that's just a comment and some
absolutely
thoughts.
Chair Leininger, Rep. Reschke, no, absolutely. So Rich Evans is tasked with helping us actually recruit to the positions that we need to fill those, to help us put in place, either with internal personnel or outside personnel, the kind of operation that we need going forward in the future. It has been, and it's been some of the issues outside of marijuana, like public safety records keeping, citations, things with the modernization that we've been looking for as we recruited, and is a broader, right? We had a lot of qualifications in place for it, and I will tell you, one of the prior potential candidates also would have been half-time because it was Rich's deputy, and for a moment, a former deputy, and for a moment, we had her enticed to maybe consider us to help us do that, and we looked at ways to split up the responsibility. I think having Rich Evans there with us working on fulfilling exactly that, putting in place the team, the processes that we need to go into the future is exactly how we intend to use it.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Excellent. You know, I have watched the great work that the OLCC has done for the last couple of years as you work to implement the voters' decision on Measure 91 and come up with systems to regulate legal marijuana that are consistent with the voters' will, but also strongly aligned with the Cole Memorandum and undertaking enforcement in a really responsible, thoughtful, proactive way. It's a very challenge. You know, we're in a delicate situation in Oregon with the leadership transition at the federal level, and as we work hard to make sure we're compliant with the Cole Memorandum and Oregon voters' will and community stakeholders' concerns about the manner in which enforcement is undertaken. I think that it's a very hard job, and if you feel like you've an extremely high stakes and important that we get it right, and if you feel like you have someone who's able to help you get it right and continue the strong work that you've undertaken, that's very, very valuable to the state and to economic development, because in order to keep this legal sector, which has generated almost $80 million in tax revenue since tax collection started, to keep it operational and keep all those people employed, we need to make sure that the sector is compliant, and we need law enforcement we need OLCC enforcement folks to be working together to make it happen. So I think this is pretty essential to the success of our mission as a committee, economic development, and to public safety, which is crucial. All right. Any other questions about any of the amendments before we move? Yes, Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair. The only comment I have on the amendment that we've just been discussing in terms of exemptions is, as I look at the existing statute 238.082, there are other exemptions for specific positions, including deputy director for the Department of Human Services. But there's additional language noting if the governor approves the exemption for the person. I wonder if it would be make some sense to have the language here consistent with those other exemptions that already exist in statute, so that you would have a governor's approval of the exemption. That would put some, should this be used in the future, this just put some more constraints around it.
Madam Chair, we'll take a look at the statute and have some advice before the work session.
Thank you.
Excellent. I have a question about I believe the dash 9. Yes. Could you confirm that set of beverages of lower alcohol concentration would only be available for sale within the distilleries that have manufactured them, right? Not grocery stores, not restaurants, only within the distilleries. Am I understanding that right?
Chair Leininger, that is correct.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Any other questions, comments?
With the exception, they would only be available in the distillery that manufactured them or in one of our retail liquor stores.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. So if they have success with the product and build up a volume, then, you know, we'd list them and they'd be distributed through our distribution to our retailers.
Thank you. Great. All right, folks, we appreciate your being here, and we'll let you go ahead and take a seat. And I will call forward J.L. Wilson, please, who signed up to provide some testimony. And again, if anyone else would like to provide testimony today, please let us know, and we'll call you up. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair Leininger, members of the committee, for the record, I'm J.L. Wilson, representing Anheuser-Busch and Ten Barrel, and testifying in favor of the Dash 8 amendments. Those are ours. And before I get into what the amendments do, I'll tell you why we're asking for them. We recently had an opportunity, or Anheuser, in conjunction with Ten Barrel, to locate what has been called a beverage innovation center. You could think of it in terms of beverage R&D, where they test products, and I guess you play around with products until you find something that works and people like, and then you try to commercialize it. But they wanted to put a location in close proximity to the 10 Barrel facility in Central Oregon. And so what was precluding them from doing that is their inability to obtain a winery license. They can obtain a brewery license, but could not obtain a winery license. And why that's important is because they intend to do beverage testing, beverage research on both grain-based beverage products as well as fruit-based beverage products, which does require a winery license. And so in order to do both, we need the winery license. But the statute that we are asking for the legislature to, in essence, delete from statute is one that prohibits a brewer of over 200,000 barrels of malt beverage from obtaining a winery license. And for the record, I do believe you can obtain a winery license. It's just that you can't simultaneously have a winery license and a full commercial and FCOM license. And we have already chosen to go down the route of having FCOM licenses with the 10 barrel brew pubs that you see in Bend and in Portland. Therefore, we were kind of left exposed with not being able to obtain a winery license for the purposes of putting this beverage innovation facility in Central Oregon. So that is why the ask is being made to delete the one section of statute, and OLCC did a fine job of explaining what it does. Just to get into the politics and the consensus building, obviously I did not intend to hold up OLCC's bill, and I wanted to make sure that there was full consensus on this amendment. And so we've worked with the beer and wine distributors. Everything we do not intend to have a retail license. Everything that gets manufactured or produced out of the R&D facility will be distributed through normal distribution channels. So there's no intention to sell out of this facility. And we also were working with the wine growers to make sure that they were amenable to this change. And so my understanding is they're working it through their process. Indications are good early on, but out of respect for them, we understood that they would give us a formal answer whether this was an acceptable change to them by this time next week. And so you should have an answer should you choose to proceed with the Dash 8s, which we'd ask you to do.
Excellent. Thanks so much. And thanks for doing the outreach that will help us all get to a strong outcome. Any comments, questions on this amendment? All right. Thank you. We look forward to hearing back. All right. Well, with that, any other questions, comments on the Senate Bill 1044? Then we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1044. Remind the committee that our next meeting is Wednesday at, bless you, Wednesday at 8:30, and adjourn. Thanks. Adjourn. Thanks.